wala pagkati sa ima. O dun muin sa mata na matayin. Sigur talang na pala panabag ka di sa ima. Matan mo isa Pavatori ayari Krishna prapti hoi aho Otei Arabrasade bai Hei Pavatori ayari Krishna prapti hoi aho Otei. Chichere gori akaya Arana gori yomane Asana Yurunga padma bhagya Chichere gori akaya Arana gori Hey, say you tell my god day. Kudana tilo ye jan me jan prabhu se Kudana tilo ye jan me jan me prabhu se Vekyan re de prakasita go Vekyan re de prakasita go Prema bhakti yoite abhijalina suyate Prema bhakti yoite abhijalina suyate Satoshi Shimad, His Divine Grace Abhaya Chatanada Vatavananda Gosami Srila Prabhupada Gijai ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Gijai Ananta Koti Vaishnav Vrinda Gijai Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Gijai Prem Sei Kaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Parabhu Nityananda Shidwaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadi Gaur Vata Vrindigajai Shishi Radhakrishna Gopikopanath Sayam Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Kijai Vrindavanam Kijai Maturam Kijai Jagannatha Swami Kijai Yamunamaya Kijai Shimati Lassa Devi Kijai Samaveda Bhakta Vrindigajai Gaur Premananda Hari Bol, all glory is the assembled devotees. All glory is the assembled devotees. All glory is the assembled devotees. All glory is to Shri Guru and Gauranga Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Namaham Vishnupadaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swamini Tiramani. Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharani. Nivashesha Shunyavadi Paschachate Shatari. So, let's read the translation. The lotus feet of our spiritual master are the only way by which we can attain pure devotional service. I bow down to his lotus feet with great awe and reverence. By his grace, one can cross the ocean of material suffering and obtain the mercy of Krishna. My only wish is to have my consciousness purified by the words emanating from his lotus mouth. Attachment to his lotus feet is the perfection that fulfills all desires. He opens my darkened eyes and fills my heart with transcendental knowledge. He is my Lord, birth after birth. From him ecstatic prema emanates, by him ignorance is destroyed. The Vedic scriptures sing of his character. Our spiritual master is the ocean of mercy, the friend of the poor, and Lord and master of the devotees. O Master, be merciful unto us. Give us the shade of your lotus feet. Your fame is spread all over the three worlds. We take shelter of your lotus feet. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. That's wonderful, isn't it? Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Okay, so with that happy note, we're going to go ahead to the Krishna book. So, Om Ganat Timidanda Shah Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshuram Meditam. Yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances under the lotus feet of my spiritual master's divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, who so kindly opened my eyes with a torch light of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance. Phew. Don't like to be blinded in the darkness of ignorance. That's a really bad idea. So, okay, with that in mind, let us go to Krishna book, and we're going to read about Krishna kidnapping Rukmini. And, okay, let's share the screen. Here we go. Screen share. Where is that? Okay, so many windows. There it is. Alrighty. We are sharing the screen with everybody. So just to reiterate what has happened in the past chapter, Krishna got a message from Rukmini, who was supposed to marry Shishupal because the marriage was arranged by her fantastic brother, Rukmi, even though the rest of her family wanted her to marry Krishna. And so she got this urgent message that was brought, Krishna got the urgent message that was from Rukmini, brought by a Brahmin messenger, and said, you know, basically what is meant for the lion should not be taken by the jackals. So, in other words, she is Krishna's eternal consort. There's no question of her marrying anyone else. Anyway, this is a pastime. So anyway, so Krishna got on his horse, called for Daruka, the chariot driver or the horse driver, whatever. Well, actually got on his chariot. And then he headed for Vidarbha. Vidarbha was where Rukmini was. And Rukmini outlined the whole plan of her kidnapping to Krishna. She said, basically, I don't want anyone hurt when you're kidnapping, because, you know, basically you Kshatriyas have a tendency to kill people. So she didn't want any of her family members hurt. And later on, we'll find out how she protected her brother, Rukmini. So she said, therefore, wait until I go to the Durga temple before the marriage and then you can kidnap me from there. And Krishna took the hint, and you'll hear what he does in this particular chapter. Very exciting. Krishna kidnaps Rukmini. Another thing is that this type of marriage is bona fide for Kshatriyas in a previous yuga. Not bona fide now. And actually, it's not just kidnapping. The point is, the marriage, for it to take place, ultimately, had to be agreed upon by both parties. Just like we see in the Mahabharata, when Bhishma kidnapped Amba, Balika, and Ambika, Amba did not want to marry his brother, which is Trivilya, so Amba had a right to refusal. So the women were not forced, but somehow or other they had to take a little excursion in the meantime. So, let's go. Krishna kidnaps Rukmini. And this is chapter number 53. We're getting through the Krishna book rather quickly, and we'll probably finish it rather quickly. After hearing Rukmini's statement in the letter, Lord Krishna was very much pleased, immediately shook hands with the Brahmana and said, "My dear Brahmana, I am very glad to hear that Rukmini is eager to marry me, since I am also eager to get her hand. My mind is always absorbed in thoughts of the daughter of Bhishmaka, and sometimes," Bhishmaka was Rukmini's father, "sometimes I cannot sleep at night because I am thinking of her." Krishna's in love. "I can understand because of her devotion." The point is, it's not that Krishna is attracted to some external aspect of beauty, but Krishna is attracted to the devotion of his devotees. And certainly Rukmini, being the goddess of fortune, is devoted. "I can understand," just like the Bhagavatam states, that the devotees just think of Krishna, and Krishna just thinks of the devotees. Krishna meditates on the devotees in his heart. Sadavodhiyam mayam, sadanam riyam tuham, madanyat tena janati, naham tebyo vanagapi. Interesting verse. "I can understand that the marriage of Rukmini with Shishupal has been arranged by her elder brother in a spirit of animosity toward me." That means he doesn't like Krishna. "So I'm determined to give a good lesson to all these princes. Just as one extracts and uses fire after manipulating ordinary wood, after dealing with these demoniac princes, I shall bring forth Rukmini like fire from their midst." Krishna, upon being informed of the specific date of Rukmini's marriage, was anxious to leave immediately. He asked his driver, Dharuka, to harness the horses for his chariot and prepare to go to the kingdom of Vidarbha. After hearing this order, the driver, four special horses. The names and descriptions of these horses are mentioned in the Padma Purana. The first one, Shaibya, was greenish. The second one, Sugriva, was grayish like ice. The third, Megapushpa, was the color of a new cloud. That's what mega means, cloud. And the last, Malahaka, was of ashen color. When the horses were yoked and the chariot was ready to go, Krishna helped the Brahmin up and gave him a seat by his side. Immediately they started from Dwarka, and within one night arrived at the province of Vidarbha. That means they must have traveled very fast. The kingdom, and there were no paved roads at that particular point. The kingdom of Vidarbha is situated in the western part of India, and Dwarka is situated in the western part of India, and Vidarbha is situated in the northern part. They are separated by a distance of not less than 1,000 miles. But the horses were so fast that they reached their destination, a town called Kundina, within one night, or at most 12 hours. And chariots bounce, but I'm sure Krishna's chariot was as smooth as silk. Krishna Bhishmaka was not enthusiastic about handing his daughter over to Shishupal, but he was obliged to accept the marriage settlement due to his affectionate attachment for his eldest son, who had negotiated it. As a matter of duty, the king was decorating the city for the marriage ceremony and acting in great earnestness to make it very successful. Water was sprinkled all over the streets, and the city was cleansed very nicely. Since India is situated in the tropical zone, the atmosphere is always dry. Dust always accumulates on the streets and roads, so they must be sprinkled with water at least once a day, and in big cities like Calcutta, twice a day, except during the rainy season. The roads of Kundina were arrayed with colored flags and festoons, and gates were constructed at particular crossings. The whole city was decorated very nicely. The beauty of the city was enhanced by the inhabitants, both men and women, who were dressed in fresh wash clothes and decorated with sandalwood pulp, pearl necklaces, and flower garlands. Incense burned everywhere, and fragrances like aguru scented the air. Priests and Brahmins were sumptuously fed, and according to ritualistic ceremony, were given sufficient wealth in cows and charity. In this way, they were engaged in chanting the Vedic hymns. The king's daughter, Rukmini, was exquisitely beautiful. She was very clean and had beautiful teeth. The auspicious sacred thread was tied on her wrist. She was given various types of jewelry to wear and a long silken cloth to cover the upper and lower parts of her body. Learned priests gave her protection by chanting mantras from the Samaveda, Rigveda, and Yajurveda. Then they chanted mantras from the Atharvaveda and offered oblations in the fire to pacify the influence of different stars. That's an astrological calculation. King Bhishmaka was experienced in dealing with Brahmanas and priests when such ceremonies were held. He specifically honored the Brahmanas by giving them large quantities of gold and silver, grain mixed with molasses and cows, decorated with cloth and ornaments. Namagosh. Shishupal's father executed all kinds of ritualistic performances to invoke good fortune for his son. Didn't work, though. Shishupala's father was known as Dhammaghosha due to his superior ability to cut down unregulated citizens. Dhamma means curbing down, and Gosha means famous, so he was famous for controlling the citizens. Dhammaghosha thought that if Krishna came to disturb the marriage ceremony, he would certainly cut him down with his military power. Therefore, after performing the various auspicious ceremonies, Dhammaghosha gathered his military divisions. He took many elephants garlanded with golden necklaces and similarly decorated chariots and horses. It appeared that Dhammaghosha, along with his son and other companions, was going to Kundina, not exactly to get Shishupal married, but mainly to fight. When King Bhishmaka learned that Dhammaghosha and his party were arriving, he left the city to receive them. Outside the city were many gardens where guests were welcome to stay. In the Vedic system of marriage, the bride's father receives the large party of the bridegroom and accommodates them in a suitable place for 2 or 3 days until the marriage ceremony is performed. The party led by Dhammaghosha contained thousands of men, among whom the prominent kings and personalities were, guess what, Jarasandha, Dandavakra, Vidurata, and Pondraka. It was an open secret that Rukmini was meant to be married to Krishna, but that her elder brother Rukmi had arranged her marriage to Shishupal. There was also some whispering about a rumor that Rukmini had sent a messenger to Krishna. Therefore, the soldiers suspected that Krishna might cause a disturbance by attempting to kidnap Rukmini. Even though they were not without fear, they were all prepared to give Krishna a good fight to prevent the girl from being taken away. Shri Balaram received the news that Krishna had left for Kundina, accompanied only by a Brahmin, and that Shishupal was there with a large number of soldiers. Balaram suspected that they would attack Krishna, and thus had a great affection for his brother. He took strong military divisions of chariots, infantry, horses, and elephants, and went to the precincts of Kundina. Meanwhile, inside the palace, Rukmini was expecting Krishna to arrive. But when neither he nor the Brahmana who took her message appeared, she was full of anxiety and began to think how unfortunate she was. There's only one night between today and my marriage day, and still neither the Brahman nor Shyamasundara has returned. I cannot ascertain any reason for this. Having little hope, she thought that perhaps Krishna had found reason to become dissatisfied and had rejected her fair proposal. As a result, the Brahmana might have become disappointed and not come back. Although she was thinking of various causes for the delay, she expected them both at any moment. Rukmini further thought that demigods such as Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and Goddess Durga might have been displeased. It is generally said that the demigods become angry when not properly worshipped. For instance, when Indra found that the inhabitants of Vrindavan were not worshipping him, Krishna, having stopped the Indra Yajna, he became angry and wanted to chastise them. Thus, Rukmini thought that since she did not worship Lord Shiva or Lord Brahma very much, they might have become angry and tried to frustrate her plan. Similarly, she thought that Goddess Durga, the wife of Lord Shiva, might have taken the side of her husband. Lord Shiva is known as Rudra, and his wife is known as Rudrani. Rudrani and Rudra refer to those who are accustomed to putting others in distress to cry forever. Oh my God. Rukmini was thinking of Goddess Durga as Girija, the daughter of the Himalaya Mountains. The Himalaya Mountains are very cold and hard, and she thought of Goddess Durga as hard-hearted and cold. In her anxiety to see Krishna, Rukmini, who was after all still a child, thought this way about the different demigods. The gopis worship Goddess Katyayani to get Krishna as their husband. Similarly, Rukmini was thinking of the various types of demigods, not for material benefit, but in respect to Krishna. Praying to the demigods to achieve the favor of Krishna is not irregular. In other words, it's allowed. And Rukmini was fully absorbed in thoughts of Krishna. For example, I have a deity of Lord Shiva on my altar. And so I prayed him to bless me with Krishna consciousness. I prayed to him as a devotee. That is God. Of course, he's a special devotee considered Vaishnavanam Yathashambhu, one of the best, or the best devotees. Of course, the best devotee is actually Radharani. So even though she pacified herself by thinking that the time for Govinda to arrive had not yet expired, Rukmini felt that she was hoping against hope. Not expressing her mind to anyone, she simply shed tears unobserved by others, and when her tears became more forceful, she closed her eyes in helplessness. While Rukmini was in such deep thought, auspicious symptoms appeared in different parts of her body. Trembling began to occur in her left eyelid, arm, and thigh. When trembling occurs in these parts of the body, it is an auspicious sign indicating that something lucrative can be expected. Now, that only applies to ladies. For men, it's the opposite side. So you guys, you know, if you have trembling on your left side, watch out, lock the door. And you ladies, if you have trembling on your right side, watch out, lock the door. Just then, Rukmini, full of anxiety, saw the Brahmana messenger Krishna Krishna, being the super soul of all living beings, could understand Rukmini's anxiety. Therefore, he sent the Brahmana inside the palace to let her know that he had arrived. When Rukmini saw the Brahmana, she could understand the auspicious trembling of her body and immediately became elated. That means happy. She smiled and inquired whether Krishna had come. Had already come. The Brahmana replied that the son of the Yadu dynasty had arrived. He further encouraged her by saying that Krishna had promised to carry her away without fail. Rukmini was so elated by the Brahmana's message that she wanted to give him charity everything she possessed. However, finding nothing suitable for presentation, she simply offered him her respectful obeisances. The significance of offering respectful obeisances to a superior is that the one offering obeisances is obliged to the respected person. In other words, Rukmini implied that she would remain ever grateful to the Brahmana. Anyone who gets the favor of the Goddess of Fortune, as did this Brahmana, is without a doubt always happy in material opulence. So in other words, she did bless the Brahmana, and the Brahmana, for the rest of the time he was here in the material world, he lived very opulently. When King Bhishmaka heard that Krishna and Balaram had come, he invited them to see the marriage ceremony of his daughter. Immediately he arranged to receive them, along with their soldiers, in a suitable garden house. As was the Vedic custom, the king offered Krishna and Balaram honey and fresh washed garments. He was hospitable not only to Krishna, Balaram, and the king, such as Jarasandha, but also to many other kings and princes according to their personal strength, age, and material possessions. Out of curiosity and eagerness, the people of Kundina assembled before Krishna and Balaram to drink the nectar of their beauty. With tearful eyes, they offered Krishna and Balaram their silent respects. They were very much pleased, considering Lord Krishna the suitable match for Rukmini. They were so eager to unite Krishna and Rukmini that they prayed to the personality of Godhead, that means to Lord Vishnu, "Our dear Lord, if we have performed any pious activities with which you are satisfied, kindly be merciful upon us and accept the hand of Rukmini." It appears that Rukmini was a very popular princess, and all the citizens, out of intense love for her, prayed for her best fortune. In the meantime, Rukmini, being very nicely dressed and protected by bodyguards, came out of the palace to visit the temple of Ambika, goddess Durga. Deity worship in the temple has been in existence since the beginning of Vedic culture. There's a class of men described in the Bhagavad Gita as Veda Vada Rata. They believe only in the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies, but not in temple worship. That's Arya Samaj, in case you're interested, or Brahmo Samaj. Such foolish people may here take note that although this marriage of Krishna and Rukmini took place more than 5,000 years ago, there were arrangements for temple worship. In the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says, "Yanti Deva Vrita Devan." That's from 9:25 in the Gita. The worshippers of the demigods attain the abodes of the demigods. There were many people who worshipped the demigods and many who directly worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The system of demigod worship was directly mainly to Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Lord Ganesh, the sun god, and goddess Durga. Lord Shiva and goddess Durga were worshipped even by the royal families. Other minor demigods were worshipped by silly, lower-class people. As far as the Brahmanas and Vaishnavas are concerned, they simply worship who? Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the Bhagavad Gita, the worship of demigods is condemned, but not forbidden. There it is clearly stated that less intelligent people... less intelligent men worship the demigods for material benefit. On the other hand, even though Rukmini was the goddess of fortune, she went to the temple of goddess Durga because the family deity was worshipped there. In Srimad Bhagavatam it is stated that as Rukmini proceeded toward the temple of goddess Durga, within her heart she always thought of the lotus feet of Krishna. Therefore, when Rukmini went to the temple, it was not with the intention of an ordinary person who goes to beg for material benefits. Her only goal is Krishna. And of course, that's similar to the gopis worshipping Durga, Katyayani, to attain Krishna as their husband. So, and then after that time, Krishna, played a trick on them. They were bathing in the river, and then Krishna made them come out without clothes. And in essence, they became Krishna's wives. And later on, when the coward boys and calves were stolen by Lord Brahma and Krishna manifested himself as the coward boys and calves, they actually married the coward boys and calves who were actually Krishna, or manifestations of Krishna. As Rukmini proceeded toward the temple, she was silent and grave. Her mother and her girlfriends were by her side, and the wife of a Brahmin was in the center. Surrounding her were royal bodyguards. The custom of a future bride's going to the temple of a demigod is still practiced in India. As the procession continued, various musical sounds were heard. Conchals, drums such as ponavos, and bugles of different sizes such as turiyas and birins, combined to make a sound which was not only auspicious but very sweet to hear. Thousands of wives of respectable brahmanas were present, all dressed very nicely with suitable ornaments. They presented Rukmini with flower garlands, sandalwood pulp, and a variety of colorful garments to assist her in worshipping Lord Shiva and goddess Durga. Some of these ladies were very old and knew perfectly well how to chant prayers to goddess Durga and Lord Shiva. So followed by Rukmini and others, they led these prayers before the deity. Rukmini offered her prayers to the deity, saying, "My dear goddess Durga, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you as well as to your children. Goddess Durga has four famous children, two daughters, the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, and the goddess of learning, Saraswati, and two sons, Lord Ganesh and Lord Kartikeya. They were all considered demigods and demigoddesses. Since Goddess Durga is always worshipped with her famous children, Rukmini specifically offered her respectful obeisances to the deity in that way. However, her prayers were special. Ordinary people pray to Goddess Durga for material wealth, fame, profits, strength, and so on. Rukmini, however, desired to have Krishna for her husband, and therefore prayed that the deity be pleased with her and bless her with that benediction. Since you desired only Krishna, her worship of the demigods is not condemned. While Rukmini was praying, she presented a variety of items before the deity, chief of which were water, different kinds of flames, incense, garments, garlands, and various foods prepared with ghee, such as puris and kachoris. Actually, Prabhupada mentioned if something's not cooked in ghee, it's considered raw, even if you boil it. She also offered fruit, sugar cane, betel nuts, and spices. With great devotion, Rukmini offered them to the deity according to the regulative principles directed by the old Brahmana ladies. After this ritualistic ceremony, the ladies offered the remnants of food to Rukmini as prasadam, which she accepted with great respect. Then, Rukmini offered her obeisances to the ladies and to the goddess Durga, and after the deity, business of deity worship was finished, Rukmini caught hold of the hand of one of her girlfriends in her own hand, which was decorated with a jeweled ring, and left the temple in the company of others. All the princes and visitors who came to Kundina for the marriage had assembled outside the temple to see Rukmini. The princes were especially eager to see her, because they all actually thought they would be having, or they would have, Rukmini as their wife. Struck with wonder upon seeing Rukmini, they thought she was especially manufactured by the Creator to bewilder all the great chivalrous princes. Her body was well constructed, the middle portion being thin. Her high hips were adorned with a jeweled locket. She had pink lips, and the beauty of her face was enhanced by her slightly scattered hair and different kinds of earrings. The bodily luster and beauty of Rukmini appeared as if painted by an artist, perfectly presenting beauty following the descriptions of great poets. Rukmini's breasts are described as being somewhat high, indicating that she was just a youth, not more than 13 or 14 years old. Her beauty was specifically intended to attract the attention of Krishna. Of course, she had a spiritual body, wasn't a material body. And it's also described later on in the Krishna book, she never aged. Although the princess gazed upon her beautiful features, she was not at all proud. Her eyes moved restlessly, and when she smiled very simply like an innocent girl, her teeth appeared just like jasmine buds. Expecting Krishna to take her away at any moment, she proceeded slowly toward her home. Her legs moved just like a full-grown swan, and her ankle bells tinkled mildly. The chivalrous princes assembled there were so overwhelmed by Rukmini's beauty that they became almost unconscious and fell from their horses and elephants. Pew! Full of lust, they hopelessly desired Rukmini's hand, comparing their own beauty to hers. Shrimati Rukmini, however, was not interested in any of them. In her heart, she was simply expecting Krishna to come and carry her away. As she was adjusting the ornaments on the finger of her left hand, she happened to look upon the princes and suddenly saw that Krishna was present amongst them. Although Rukmini had never before seen Krishna, she was always thinking of him. Thus, she had no difficulty recognizing him among the princely order. Krishna, unconcerned with the other princes, immediately took the opportunity to place Rukmini on his chariot, marked by a flag bearing an image of Garuda. He then proceeded slowly without fear, taking Rukmini away exactly as a lion takes a deer from the midst of jackals. Meanwhile, Balaram appeared on the scene with soldiers of the Yadu dynasty. Jarasandha, who had many times experienced defeat by Krishna, roared, "How is this?
Krishna is taking Rukmini away from us without opposition. What is the use of our being chivalrous fighters with arrows? My dear princess, just look. We are losing our reputation. He is just like a jackal taking booty from a lion. Phew. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purport of the 53rd chapter of Krishna. Krishna kidnaps Rukmini. And actually we'll continue. Krishna defeats all the princes and takes Rukmini home to Dwarka. Jarasandha and all the other princes were very angry at Krishna for having kidnapped Rukmini. Struck by Rukmini's beauty, they had fallen from the backs of the horses and elephants, but now they began to stand up and properly arm themselves. Picking up their bows and arrows, they began to chase Krishna on their chariots, horses, and elephants. To check their progress, the soldiers of the Yadu dynasty turned and faced them. Thus, terrible fighting began between the two belligerent groups. The princes opposing Krishna, who were led by Jarasandha, were all expert in fighting, shot their arrows at the Yadu soldiers just as a cloud splashes the face of a mountain with torrents of rain. Gathered on the face of a mountain, a cloud does not move very much, and therefore the force of rain is much more severe on a mountain than anywhere else. The opposing princes were determined to defeat Krishna and recapture Rukmini from his custody, and they fought with him as severely as possible. Rukmini, seated on the side of Krishna, saw arrows raining from the opposing party onto the faces of the Yadu soldiers. In a fearful attitude, she looked upon Krishna's face, expressing her gratefulness that he had taken such a great risk for her sake only. Her eyes moving, she appeared sorry. And Krishna, who could immediately understand her mind, encouraged her with these words. My dear Rukmini, don't worry. Please rest assured that the soldiers of the Yadu dynasty will kill all the opposing soldiers without delay. As Krishna was speaking with Rukmini, the commanders of the Yadu dynasty soldiers, headed by Lord Balaram, who was also known as Sankarsana, as well as by Gada, not tolerating the defiant attitude of the opposing soldiers, began to strike their horses, elephants, and chariots with arrows. As the fighting progressed, the princes and soldiers of the enemy began to fall from their horses, elephants, and chariots. Within a short time, millions of severed heads, decorated with helmets and earrings, had fallen on the battlefield. The soldiers' hands were severed along with their bows and arrows and clubs. Arms were piled upon arms, thighs upon thighs, and horses upon horses. Similarly, other animals such as camels, elephants, and asses, as well as infantry soldiers, all fell with severed heads. When the enemy, headed by Jarasandha, found that they were gradually being defeated by the soldiers of Krishna, they thought it unwise to risk losing their armies in the battle for the sake of Shishupala. Shishupala himself should have fought to rescue Rukmini from the hands of Krishna, but when the soldiers saw that Shishupala was not competent to fight with Krishna, they decided not to lose their armies unnecessarily. Therefore, they ceased fighting and dispersed. Some of the princes, as a matter of etiquette, appeared before Shishupala. They saw that Shishupala was discouraged, like one who has lost his wife. His face appeared dried up, he had lost all of his energy, and all the luster of his body had disappeared. They addressed Shishupala thus, "Our dear Shishupala, don't be discouraged in this way. You belong to the royal order and are the chief amongst the fighters. There is no question of distress or happiness for a person like you, because neither of these conditions is everlasting. Take courage. Don't be disappointed by this temporary reversal. After all, we are not the final actors, as puppets dance in the hands of a magician. We are all dancing by the will of the Supreme, according to his plan. Alone, we suffer distress or enjoy happiness. We should therefore be equipoised in all circumstances." Although in the beginning the princes had been full of hope for the success in their heroic action, after their defeat they could only try to encourage Shishupala with flattering words. Thus Shishupala, instead of marrying Rukmini, had to be satisfied with the flattering words of his friends, and he returned home in disappointment. The kings who had come to assist him, also disappointed, then returned to their respective kingdoms. The whole catastrophe of the defeat was due to the envious nature of Rukmini's elder brother, Rukmini. Having seen his sister forcibly taken away by Krishna after he had planned to marry her to Shishupala, Rukmini was frustrated. So after Shishupala's friend and intended brother-in-law returned home, Rukmini, very much agitated, was determined to teach Krishna a lesson personally. He called for his own soldiers, a military phalanx consisting of several thousand elephants, horses, chariots, and infantry. And equipped with this military strength, he began to follow Krishna to Dwarka. To show his prestige, Rukmini promised all the returning kings, "You cannot help Shishupal marry my sister Rukmini, but I cannot allow Rukmini to be taken away by Krishna. I shall teach him a lesson. Now I am going to follow him." He presented himself as a big commander and vowed before all the princes, "Unless I kill Krishna in the fight and bring back my sister from his clutches, I shall not return to my capital city, Kundina. I make this vow before you all, and you will see that I shall fulfill it." After thus vibrating all these boasting words, Rukmini immediately got up on his chariot and told his chariot driver to pursue Krishna. He said, "I want to fight with him immediately. This coward boy has become very proud of his tricky way of fighting with Kshatriyas, but today I shall teach him a good lesson. Because he had the impudence to kidnap my sister, I, with my sharp arrows, shall teach him very good lessons indeed." Thus the unintelligent man, Rukmi, ignorant of the extent of the strength and activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, voiced his impudent threats. In great stupidity, he stood before Krishna, telling him repeatedly, "Stop for a moment and fight with me." After saying this, he drew his bow and directly shot three forceful arrows against Krishna's body. Then he condemned Krishna as the most abominable descendant of the Yadu dynasty and asked him to stand before him for a minute so he could teach him a good lesson. "You are carrying away my sister just like a crow stealing clarified butter meant for use in a sacrifice. You are proud of your military strength, but you cannot fight according to regulated principles. You have stolen my sister, now I shall relieve you of your false prestige. You can keep my sister in your possession only until I beat you to the ground for good with my arrows." Lord Krishna, after hearing all these crazy words from Rukmini, immediately shot an arrow and severed the string of Rukmini's bow, making him unable to use another arrow. Rukmini immediately took another bow and shot another five arrows at Krishna. Being attacked for the second time, Krishna again severed Rukmini's bowstring. Rukmini took a third bow, and Krishna again cut its string. This time, to teach Rukmini a lesson, Krishna shot six arrows at him and then shot another eight arrows, killing four horses with four arrows, killing the chariot driver with another arrow, and chopping off the upper portion of Rukmini's chariot, including the flag with the remaining three arrows. Rukmini, having run out of arrows, took assistance from swords, shields, tridents, lances, and similar weapons used for fighting hand-to-hand, but Krishna immediately broke them all in the same way. Being repeatedly baffled in his attempts, Rukmini took his sword and ran swiftly toward Krishna, just as a fly proceeds towards a fire. But as soon as Rukmini reached Krishna, Krishna cut his weapon to pieces. This time, Krishna took out his sharp sword and was about to kill him immediately. But Rukmini's sister, Rukmini, understanding that this time Krishna would not excuse her brother, fell down at Krishna's lotus feet, and in a very grievous tone, trembling with great fear, began to plead with her husband. Rukmini first addressed Krishna as Yogeshwara. Yogeshwara means one who possessed inconceivable potency and energy. Krishna possesses inconceivable opulence and energy, whereas Rukmini's brother had only limited military potency. Krishna is immeasurable, whereas her brother was measured in every step of his life. Therefore, Rukmini was not comparable even to an insignificant insect before the unlimited power of Krishna. She also addressed Krishna as the god of the gods. There are many powerful demigods such as Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Indra, Chandra, and Varuna, but Krishna is the lord of all these gods, whereas Rukmini's brother was not only an ordinary human being, but in fact the lowest of all because he had no understanding of Krishna. In other words, a human being who has no conception of the actual position of Krishna is the lowest in human society. Then Rukmini addressed Krishna as Mahabhuja, which means one with unlimited strength. She also addressed Krishna as Jagatpati, the master of the whole cosmic manifestation. In comparison, her brother was an ordinary prince. In this way, Rukmini compared the position of Rukmi with that of Krishna, and very feelingly pleaded with her husband not to kill her brother, just at the auspicious time of her being united with Krishna, but to excuse him. In other words, she displayed her real position as a woman. She was happy to get Krishna as her husband at the moment when her marriage to another was to be performed. But she did not want it to be at the loss of her elder brother, who, after all, loved his younger sister and wanted to hand her over to one who, according to his own calculations, was a better man. While Rukmini was praying to Krishna for the life of her brother, her whole body trembled, and because of her anxiety, her face appeared to dry up, and her throat became choked, and due to her trembling, the ornaments on her body loosened and fell scattered to the ground. In this manner, when Rukmini was very much perturbed, she fell down on the ground, and Lord Krishna immediately became compassionate and agreed not to kill the foolish Rukmini. But at the same time, he wanted to give him some light punishment, so he tied him up with a piece of cloth and snipped at his mustache, beard, and hair, keeping some spots here and there. While Krishna was dealing with Rukmini in this way, the soldiers of the Yadav dynasty, commanded by Balaram himself, broke the whole strength of Rukmini's army, just as an elephant in a pond discards the feeble stem of a lotus flower. In other words, as an elephant breaks the whole construction of a lotus flower while bathing in a reservoir of water, the military strength of the Yadus broke up Rukmini's forces. When the commanders of the Yadav dynasty came back to see Krishna, they were all surprised to see the condition of Rukmini. Lord Balaram became especially compassionate toward his sister-in-law, who was newly married to his brother. To please Rukmini, Balaram personally untied Rukmini, and to further please her, Balaram, as the elder brother of Krishna, spoke some words of chastisement. "Krishna, your action is not at all satisfactory," he said. "This is an abomination very much contrary to our family tradition. To cut someone's hair and shave his mustache and beard is almost comparable to killing him. Whatever Rukmini might have been, he is now our brother-in-law, a relative of our family, and you have not have put him into such a condition." So, let's see, should we read another paragraph? How much more is there in this? It's quite a bit more. Okay, the Balaram's instructions to Krishna. Okay, so we'll continue tomorrow. Oh, not tomorrow, because we got Sunday Feast, which we're going to broadcast also. So next time we'll continue with this story, and we'll finish the chapter up of Krishna kidnapping Rukmini. So right now, as we usually do, we are going to allow you to ask questions. Very exciting story. It's actually one of my favorite stories. Krishna united with the goddess of fortune. So, who has a question? You can raise your hand, type in the chat window, or you can unmute yourself if you want. Anybody? Huh. Anyway, if there's no questions, we'll just continue reading. Oh, Rishikesh, you have a question.
Yes, Krishna, I just was curious to know, when Krishna took almost one day to reach from Dwarka to Vidarbha to to rescue Rukmini Mata, and then immediately the same day he kidnapped Rukmini. But it seems Balaram was already there. Balaram also came at the same time. With a huge army.
Balaram was fighting with a huge army. It takes a long time, 1,000 miles.
Yeah, but so Balaram, I'm wondering how come they came so quickly there?
Because Krishna is God and Balaram is God.
Okay.
And remember, there were no paved roads at that time, and there were actually forest paths and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, just such a huge army, you know, getting that so...
Yeah, I mean, somehow or other, you know, Krishna could do anything. You know, he transported everybody through the air to Dwarka, didn't he?
Yeah.
So certainly he could arrange the huge army can come very quickly like that. And so the Brahmana who was the messenger also came with Krishna on Krishna's chariot.
Right.
Okay. Good question. Who else has a question? Oh, Sam.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
My question is, how do you do with Lord Shiva? Worship Lord Shiva, help me in my devotional service to Lord Krishna. How does that work?
Does that work? You pray to Lord Shiva. I mean, I don't do any formal worship, maybe on Shiva Ratri. It's not formal, but it's like a picture of Prabhupada on the altar, and the deity I have of Lord Shiva is the deity of Lord Shiva meditating on Krishna. It's not the Shiva Linga. It's Lord Shiva as a devotee meditating on Krishna. So that's how. Let me pray to Lord Shiva. He's a devotee. Just like I pray to Prabhupada and I pray to all the great devotees, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Gorkashodas Babaji Maharaj, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and Srila Vyasadeva, a whole disciplic succession, Narottama Das Thakur and others. So nothing super formal. Okay, good question. Sumukh, you have a question. You can unmute yourself.
Okay. Please assemble Habal Mrs. Guru Maharaj. Gurudev, Hare Krishna. Gurudev, I heard that in one of the class that the Guru represents all the demigods.
Yes.
So then why do you, when you worship our Guru, it's automatically all the demigods are worshipped. And through Guru's mercy, all the demigods' mercy, we get Radharaj's mercy and we get Krishna. So why have to have separate the demigods?
Why do we even worship Krishna? Why don't we just worship the Guru by that logic?
Yeah.
So, the Guru is also representing the Sampradaya, but we also worship Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, the Guru. Yes, the Guru represents all the demigods, but we don't ignore the demigods or offend the demigods. And the Guru represents the disciplic succession. We worship the members of the disciplic succession. So it's not because the Guru represents these particular individuals that we ignore them. We don't have to worship you. The Guru represents Krishna, right?
Right.
So why should we worship Krishna?
Yeah. Another question came in my mind. When we all know that this place is a Dukhalema Shashvatam. The place is full of misery, and we are all
fully aware of that, and I become more fully aware as I get older. Yes, it's definitely, I'm 100%, if I have 100% conviction, it's 100% conviction that this place is a place of misery. There's not an ounce or millimeter or whatever of doubt in that. 100% faith. Okay, so go ahead.
Yeah, so we are all suffering every moment. You know, if you
not every moment, not every moment, that would be really intense. We are sometimes the suffering lets up and we think everything's going well. Sometimes there's no problems for a day, and then all hell breaks loose after that. In other words, as we, I don't know if you know this saying, when it rains, it pours. That means when something goes wrong, it's going to, wow, watch out. Lock the doors. Close your eyes. So what's the question?
My question is, if this place is always the place of calamities, all suffering all the time, then
yeah,
why does Kunti praise, Mother Kunti praise, that give me suffering, 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 suffering? Because this place is full of suffering, and why does she?
Yes, but it's not all the time. Sometimes it lets up, thank God. It was all the time. It was all the time. You'd be dealing with a bunch of crazy people. So the point is, it's not all the time. It's sukha dukkha.
Okay.
It's a place of misery, yes, but it's sukha dukkha. It's alternating happiness and distress.
Okay.
That's what gives us hope. that we can enjoy this material world, you know, for a few days, a few moments or whatever, then the distress lets up. And then you're thinking everything's all right. I mean, just like I had a kidney stone operation, you know, so the kidney stone taken out, no more pain. Or even when I was suffering from the kidney stone, for a few hours sometimes, the pain let up. And I just thought, boy, this material world is so nice. No, I didn't. thank God the pain has let up. So, yes, it's not suffering all the time. Queen Kundi just wants to be reminded. Her life was actually quite intense. She was, I would say, when they were living in the palace, she was always in anxiety about the safety of her kids. And so she was definitely remembering Krishna. I mean, she was a pure devotee. She always remembers Krishna. She's pointed out to us that the whole point is to remember Krishna. The sukha and dukkha of this world is meant to actually bring us to the point of crying, hey Govinda, hey Gopal, Keshava Madhava, Dina Dayal. That's the whole point. You understand?
Yes,
that's the reason for this material world. But it's not 100% suffering.
Also, Gurudev, when you worship, then you must have a peace of mind. Your mind should be very peaceful when you are worshipping. I'm a pujari. My mind has to be very peaceful when I address the deities. I decorate the deities. The peaceful is also there, peacefulness.
Well, sometimes when you're worshipping Krishna, the mind's in anxiety, you know. Krishna, save me. You know, so, I mean, one has to have enough self-control, especially when they're doing deity worship. But we approach Krishna as our best friend, and we pray to Krishna to save us. You know, Ainanda Tanuja Kinkaram, Patitam Mam Vishame Bhavambudo, Kripaya Tavapada Pankaja, Stita Duli Sedra Sampachintaya. Oh, son of Maharaj Nanda, I'm your eternal servitor, yet somehow or other I've fallen to this horrible ocean of birth and death. Please fix me from, save me from this ocean of death, and fix me as one of the atoms at your lotus feet. So that's a kind of distressful prayer. Help! You have to understand you're drowning. The problem is we don't think we're drowning. We think, you know, I'm all right. I got my nice job working for Fiji Electric, like you do. I have my house, I have my deity worship, I have my young, beautiful wife, I have... Right? And you forget how miserable this world is, and you're not intense, so... All right, so there's one more question in the text window. Gurudev, while hearing Krishna's chivalrous pastime, I try to imagine, but today I imagine, this is the deities, Radhagadari fighting. No, Giriraj doesn't fight. Then get confused. There is Radharani, not Rukmini. But she is expansion and non-different than that thought of Rukmini Dwarkadish. Is it offensive, or should we restrain such imagination? Interesting question. Just remember that the Krishna you worship on the altar and Radharani that worship on the altar expand as Vasudev Krishna and Rukmini. And this is their pastime. Their pastime that they expand. Now in the mood in which they're on the altar they may not have that same mood, so we don't want to disturb. It's not offensive, but we don't want to disturb the deity's mood. I think that's important. Okay. Thank you very much for your very interesting questions. And hopefully everybody understood. So we'll see everybody hopefully tomorrow at the same time for our Sunday feast program, which I'm not sure what I'm going to be speaking about. But it won't be the Krishna book reading for the Sunday feast. Or I don't know what it'll be. Okay, thank you very much. All glories to His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.